are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC. Welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we are against so very much, what in the world do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device on which you're listening right now probably wasn't free, the radio waves you're listening to are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat or a mug or a t-shirt, and all the proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. If you like any of the programming on WXRW, please reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. And now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device at home to play WXRW River West Radio. We are on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay, today's episode is a really important, kind of crucial linchpin to The Anti as an ongoing series. There are a lot of terms that get used pretty frequently on this show. And they're also going to appear regularly in debates and discussions about any kind of social justice issue. Concepts like direct action, class violence, mutualism, autonomy, and anarchism will all require their own shows to address fully. Today, we'll cover or at least kind of start to talk about and define, hopefully, maybe the most important piece of terminology I personally use really frequently, and that term is structural violence. Today's show is all about structural violence. As with all terms, the definition of structural violence has changed and evolved, and it's going to change and evolve more since its original coining. And my usage of it in particular is maybe a bit broader than it was originally intended. But I'll use this week's show to kind of defend my definition as it pertains to the overall usage of the term. And by the end of the episode, hopefully I will have made a case, a good case for a new, more kind of expansive definition of structural violence. But whether or not my altered definition, holds any water, that'll be entirely up to you and your interpretation. So structural violence as a concept was first really documented and studied with any real discipline by Johan Galtung, a Swedish mathematician. And you might be asking yourself, what mathematics has to do with sociology, and I think the two are inexorably linked, honestly. A lot of the time, social studies kind of divests itself from, I don't want to say facts, but, facts. And it kind of opts instead to focus on stories, and you could kind of say hearsay a little bit. And, what do they say? History is famously told by the winners, of conflict, right? Well, math cannot be skewed so easily. Someone can check your work in mathematics and tell you if you're wrong. And really, science in general has a certain edge over a lot of the humanities, at least insofar as it's provable and testable in ways that, for example, history just isn't. There's a lot of conjecture involved in history is what I'm saying. And no offense to historians, I'm a student of history too. But anyway, Johan Galtung, mathematician, And he used the discipline of math and science in particular to study social issues on a vast scale using a systems approach. The term systems approach is another one that you're going to hear me use a lot, and it will probably need its own show to kind of define it. But for now, my kind of simple working definition is systems approach is a kind of like a, it's a set of interrelated groups or parts which all interact with each other as both cause and effect. I see a systems approach as being very like the dialectics that Marx talks about in his book Capital. A systems approach recognizes those dialectics in all of our systems, both the ones that we have invented and also the immutable interconnectedness of all of nature and all of the natural world. So Johann Galtung coins this phrase, structural violence, and he forms essentially kind of like a think tank to study what it is and how it affects the population of the world. And it's notable here that Galtung, being a scientist and not necessarily limited to his scope or biased by the lens of his own species, extends his definition and study of structural violence to also include animals. And that's another reason a systems approach is so crucial here. I think the debate about animal rights, it's probably another show, but I really like that Galtung includes animals in his larger discussion. So structural violence, according to Johann Galtung, I wasn't able to find like a direct quote with a really nice, neat, you know, definition of Galtung's structural violence. So I came up with this to paraphrase. Structural violence is any obscured built-in system or institution which works to the detriment of people and animals by withholding the means by which those people and animals may meet their fundamental needs. And I use the word obscured, but I really, as I'm listening to it, I think just as right would be the term obfuscate, because structural violence is right there. It's right there in the open for all of us to see. But again, the lens of our particular social awareness has been clouded over or kind of fogged up by the institutions that support structural violence. What do I mean by that? We can't see the forest for the trees. So accustomed are we to this insidious form of violence. So any obscured or obfuscated built-in institution or system which works to the detriment of people and animals in withholding the means by which they may meet their fundamental needs. And let me make a note here, because I know some listeners are probably kind of asking themselves about this or may, you know, or making an observation. I think it would be very easy to lump in overt state violence into this definition, since it is definitely a part of the structure of our modern society, and certainly a violent part. And I'd be just as happy as the next person to lump state violence in with all those other forms of violence. But for this episode, at least, let's keep structural violence and state violence separate. Even though Galtung does recognize that a lot of forms of overt direct violence are direct results of the more obfuscated kind of structural violence that's built into our systems and institutions. Okay, so what are some examples of structural violence according to Galtung? A lot of the isms, really, are just easy examples to point to and so easy for us to wrap our head around because they're so very much included in our social justice dialogues. So like racism, sexism, classism, ableism, speciesism, again, thank you, Jotun, nationalism, and all of the things that this show is against in general. Any such inherent, built-in, historical disenfranchisement of whole swaths of humanity and just, you know, the general population of life on this planet is a key function of structural violence. And what's of primary importance to Galtung in his definition is that all of these forms of violence are avoidable. They are constructed invented forms of systemic oppression that, although they in and of themselves are not directly violent, not like a gunshot wound, you know, or a knife stabbing or anything like that, they nevertheless restrict a person's ability to defend themselves, support themselves, and just generally survive in this world.
The basic thesis that I stand for is very simple. Wherever there is violence, there is an unresolved conflict. Unresolved conflict means that there is an incompatibility of goals, including means, that has not been resolved, has not been superseded, has not been transformed, has not been transcended. That conflict can be direct between actors who have conscious goals. It can be structural between parties that have their interests. In other words, if you don't like violence, solve the conflict. You may, of course, try to do something with a violent party, eliminating, taking him out, in one way or the other incapacitating him, and in all likelihood you have done nothing because the conflict is still there, unresolved. So how do we handle that? And the basic point, if I should say so, about the method I stand for, is not to get the parties together around the table. It is not to negotiate. It is not to arrive at a compromise. You look at the goals that I stand for and you ask yourself, are these goals legitimate? How do I know whether anything is legitimate? Well, I need three criteria. The first one is a rather flimsy and not very good one, law. The reason why it's not very good is that it's usually an expression of upper class interests. And for that reason, very often unacceptable. But that's not always the case. It's usually status quo oriented. And it is quite obvious that if you want to resolve a deep conflict, you have to change the status quo. The second criterion is human rights that we are celebrating tomorrow. They are a little bit more vague, they are not institutionalized, but they cover at last a broad field. Remember that the Declaration of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is not international law. It's a declaration. International law came the 16th of December 1966 with the conventions. And the first one is civil political rights and is to a large extent a repetition. That one has very much to do with direct conflict, with repression, with imposition of somebody else's culture. But the second convention is equally important, economic and social rights, that have to do with structural conflict. Lift people up from the indignity of misery. Human rights is a fantastic guide if you use the two conventions of 1966, not only one of them. But there is something that is even deeper than human rights, basic human needs. They are uncodified, controversial, non-institutionalized. I operate with four, based on extensive empirical research. Survival, somatic well-being, freedom of the mind, and identity of the spirit. So to me, the human being is a combination of body, mind, and spirit, and these four basic needs apply to all of them.
That was the man himself, Johan Galtung, speaking at the University of San Diego about conflict resolution and breaking the cycle of violence. The entire talk is about an hour long, and it's really, really good, and it's all available to watch online. I highly recommend you take a look. If you're just joining us, you're listening to WXRW River West Radio, and this is The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. I'm your host, NTSC. And this week we're talking about structural violence, what it is, what various forms it takes, how my definition differs from Johan Galton's, and as always, how do we fight against it? So we just heard an excerpt from a larger talk on peace given by Johan Galton, the Swedish mathematician, generally credited with coining the phrase structural violence. He touches on a few key points that I really respect. In any conflict resolution, when addressing concerns and goals of any party, he deems illegitimate any goal which is based solely on the rule of law. He recognizes that such goals are inherently and always based on the status quo, and that the status quo must always be changed to achieve true conflict resolution. The second point he makes is to stress that people must be lifted out of their misery to achieve any lasting peace and prosperity. Again, that's something that the rule of law and the violence of the state has no vested interest in doing. And then he states his four criteria for the act of lifting people from their misery. They just have to have certain needs met: survival, somatic well-being, freedom of the mind, and identity of the spirit. And structural violence attacks us in all of those four arenas. So all of this is sounding pretty anecdotal, so let's do what a mathematician would do and look at some facts to start talking about what structural violence really is and how it affects you and everyone and everything on this planet. Access to healthcare and also general health both have a large disparity along racial lines. According to a study done by the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a healthcare analyst group, Black Americans are twice as likely to die of diabetic complications than white Americans. Black Americans suffer from statistically significant mortality rates, both from heart disease and cancer, in numbers higher than white Americans. 21% of Hispanic Americans and 13% of Black Americans are uninsured versus only 9% of white Americans. The infant mortality rate of Black Americans is double that of white Americans. Speaking of infant mortality, across all demographics, infant mortality accounts for more than double the deaths caused by, for example, handguns in the U.S. And here we go. Handguns are a favorite hot button issue. But where is the outrage against the literal infants under 1 year of age who die from avoidable structural causes? And let's stick with statistics centered on kids for a second, because those tend to really hit people in their heartstrings. According to UNICEF, 3 million children literally starve to death every single year. That is equivalent to more than 3 Milwaukee counties of only children, of just children, under the age of 5, starving to death every single year. And that's just if you count kids under the age of 5. A global poverty research group raises the bar to under 12 years of age, and you have 6 million children, or literally a full-on holocaust of children, starving to death every single year. And in total, about 36 million people across all age demographics worldwide die every year from malnutrition. That is structural violence on a truly horrific scale. Adding to our global shame, America alone throws away 31% of all of our edible food because nobody purchased it. The figure is roughly 133 billion with a B, billion, 133 billion pounds of good edible food every single year gets thrown out, while 36 million people worldwide are starving to death. And while we're on the topic of mortality, let's look at the leading cause of death worldwide. Everyone knows the statistic: the biggest killers worldwide are heart disease, cancer and stroke. I don't know if they're in that order, but heart disease is number one. I know that. What we're not being told, despite the fact that the research has plainly proved this, is there are very real, deeply embedded causes to a lot of those deaths. And that deeply embedded cause is stress. The American Psychological Association, over decades of research, has concluded that stress, and we're just talking the kind of daily stress that everyone deals with, stress has a direct causal effect on heart disease, cancer, lung disease, workplace, household, and automobile accidents, liver disease, and of course, suicide. And really, that is perhaps the greatest form of structural violence we all face every day. The fact that you need to hustle at a job, any job, to earn a currency that will purchase you food, housing, healthcare, education. The fact that you need to do that is violence, especially then when you factor in the inherent inequality of this system, because the quality of your food and your water and the air you breathe, and the housing in which you live, and the infrastructure in which you exist, and the education, and all services, the quality and quantity of all of those things is completely dependent on your available financial resources. And for disenfranchised, unprivileged populations, the quality of all of those things is very, very poor. And that is structural violence. And this is where my personal usage and definition of structural violence kind of differs a little from Johann Galtung's. He addresses class disparity and class violence and all of that, but he makes the mistake, I think at least, of not extending the stresses caused by racial inequality and gender inequality and class inequality and speciesism and all of it. He stops short of addressing the inherent violence of the very basis of our neoliberal society. We talked about neoliberalism last week. Put a different way is just to say Johann Galtung doesn't take, in my opinion, the next logical step of recognizing capitalism really as a major factor and root cause of structural violence. We'll talk more about the tyranny of the workplace and the self-imposed tyranny of, you know, our social mores and our social folkways and stuff like that in a later episode. But suffice it to say, the stress of instability as it relates to nutrition and housing and the exercise that you get, you know, your lifestyle and the quality of the water that you drink and the air that you breathe, as based on geopolitical and, you know, socioeconomic factors, is all a symptom of the capitalist mode of production and is medically proven to cause fatal stress in billions of people worldwide. And of course, environmental destruction as well. Those two things are also dialectics, by the way, which is worth pointing out since we're taking a systems approach here, as we stated earlier. So my definition of structural violence extends to all forms of hierarchy and coercion and control and manipulation, which serve only to limit an individual's somatic well-being, freedom of the mind, and identity of the spirit, which, if you recall, are the four pillars Galtung arrived at through years and years of research. The built-in violence imposed by any hierarchy limits freedom of the mind and identity of the spirit by limiting personal agency and limiting the opportunity to self-actualize, limiting that opportunity to almost zero. We cannot choose the means or the terms of our own lives within this system. That is structural violence. It's a violence that is directed against the many by the few. It trickles down from the empowered, gentried capitalist class to the working class. And Galtung doesn't make that final logical step. I do. And I think, I feel very strongly that the numbers support me. Stress-related heart disease, you know, the world's largest killer. 75% of those deaths caused by stress-related heart disease are in low and middle-income individuals. And that's a really interesting figure to kind of examine quickly. 75% of heart disease mortality is in low and middle income households. That means, just mathematically, the other 25% are people within high income brackets. Stress is not necessarily only a killer of the poor, but of the rich as well. Structural violence, although it has an easier time killing the poor, is really killing everyone. Obviously, the poor and the disenfranchised and anybody who belongs to an unprivileged kind of, you know, social class is going to be easier prey for structural violence, but it's killing everyone. And once you accept that, you know, the destabilization of the environment globally has a direct cause in the capitalist mode of production, universal commodification, cyclical circular consumption, structural violence could really be seen as the potential end of all life on Earth as we know it, if you just take that little logical step. Is that hyperbole? Maybe. Like I said, my definition of structural violence is, you know, it's broader than Johann Galtung's, but that my definition is the working definition that I'll be basing a lot of my arguments on as this series progresses. So it bears repeating for the record. Structural violence is any obscured or obfuscated built-in system or institution which works to the detriment of people and animals by withholding the means by which those people and animals may meet their fundamental basic needs. Okay, so we spent most of the show talking about what structural violence is, and we don't really have enough time left in the half hour to even begin touching on the grander topic of how do we recognize the specific structural violences in our communities, our cultures, and our larger society as a whole, and how do we address it, and how do we fight against it, and eventually how do we fix it. There's lots of different ways through which we can achieve that, and some of those will require direct action, which we've yet to officially define here on the show. But rest assured, in the Anti, we will go over further techniques by which we may all organize against the very real threat of structural violence and hopefully achieve some sort of lasting global peace for the human family. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I am your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. And for more information about the show, visit riverwestradio.com.